Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, good morning. This is the Saturday Morning Test Drive brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing with your host, David Blassingame.
Good morning.
Tammy Pickard.
Hey there, sunshine.
Larry is with us.
Good morning, guys.
And I am Sybil. Hello, hello. You, the most important part of the show, the Tolos, can reach us at 877-881-1053 or at 10 o'clock. You can call AutoFlex. That's when the doors will be open and the numbers are
either 817 or 972 or any local area code. And then 234-1234, 888-234-1234, out of the area. And as always, AutoFlex.com, where you can find those great Save Money Monday cars listed under Manager Specials.
Mm-hmm. AutoFlex.com. And coming up at 916, we're going to have Marianne Keller and Associates. We'll just have actually the Marianne Keller of the Marianne Keller and Associates, an auto analyst that is an expert in the industry, so you won't want to miss that. We'll be talking to her and taking questions.
You bet.
All right. Let's get right into it today.
Okay, so Tesla this last week, a memo leaked that said, we are making more cars and they are better than anyone thought they could be. And all of a sudden, all of these guys that said Tesla was going to die and all of the stock market guys that were bears and said, sell them short. Well, maybe they're wrong.
Really? Or is this just spin?
I think it's spin.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, you do anything long enough, you get good at it. And they have been building cars for a while now. Now, there's not a lot of demand, at least in Texas, for their vehicles. There are in other states and in other countries, and a lot of their business is done overseas. A lot of their business is done in Europe, and as well, they're trying to build a factory in China to sell cars over there. So it's a many, many tentacled thing we're dealing with here. But the interesting thing is, for the first time, people are starting to take them serious.
Hmm. Now, this is when they say it's a bear industry. What is the saying? Bear versus lion?
It's bear versus bull.
Yes, and that's right.
The bulls buy and mm-hmm. the bears sell.
Okay.
And for the folks that have been short selling Tesla, they may have done it a little too quickly because it appears that they are coming back. So it's an interesting thing. Their vehicle sales have gone up rather remarkably since 2017. And it looks like in the second quarter of 19, their growth is going to be about 115% over what it was back in 2017. Well, it's a big change.
Yeah, that's good for them.
Yeah, we'll see.
I like that. You do have to wait and see before you can, really, make an opinion.
It's nice if you can predict it early and get in and make money or keep from losing too much money, but we'll see.
We'll see.
Okay, so yesterday, a train derailed west of Nevada, 33 train cars in Lincoln County, and the cargo consisted of Jeep Gladiators, Jeep Wranglers, Chevrolet Silverados, and GMC Sierras. It destroyed all of these vehicles, or most of these vehicles. And the interesting thing is most people don't know what happens.
Yeah, if there's 33 train cars, how many actual vehicles are on each train car?
Well, that and what happens to the ones that aren't really damaged badly?
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is they scrap them all.
One of them?
Because they were in the accident, the liability to the manufacturer would be something could go wrong later. Mm. And you could say, oh, it was in the train, it was wrecked. Even though it seemed to be all right, wasn't all right. So they will scrap all of these vehicles, 33 train cars full of them.
They can't, at least salvage some of the parts?
Right.
Nope. They send them to the scrapyard. They crush them.
It's like a motorcycle helmet. If you just drop it, even if it's brand new, if you drop it, they're like, don't ever use that on the road. That's
really?
The law.
Mm-hmm.
Back to liability again. Okay, so what does this mean? Well, if you live Nevada or west and you wanted a Gladiator or a Wrangler or a Silverado or a Sierra, what it means is probably not, because it's going to be a little slower to get those vehicles out there. 33 train cars.
What if
full
there
of
was
cars.
A special order on it?
Doesn't matter.
I recall a client of mine eons ago had ordered a special order Volvo XC90
mm-hmm.
with the big engine, the all-wheel drive, special color. And I didn't hear the news before I got to work, but he called me as soon as I walked in the door and said, "Hey, was my Volvo on that ship?" I'm like, "What ship?"
Oh, no.
He said, "The one that sunk in the sea." So I called. No, fortunately, they could track by the VIN his mm-hmm. car, because it was due to be shipped, but it was not on the ship that sank, which is good.
That is a good thing.
I know.
Autoflex Leasing Fan Text. Good morning, Samuel in Arlington. Thanks for texting in.
Good morning, Sam.
Autoflex Leasing Fan Text. I don't know the demand in Texas for Tesla, but during the week when I drive a truck five or six past me through the Metroplex coming from Oklahoma.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I see one maybe once a week or two a week maybe, mm-hmm. but five or six on one trip from Oklahoma to DFW.
They were road tripping.
Yeah. Oh, I'd have range anxiety.
Right?
Yes.
Driving, Autoflex Leasing Fan Text, except it's evidently verbal. I'm driving, I can't text, sent from my Rogue. By golly.
Oh, but they said, "I work in Carrollton and there are two Teslas owned by someone in our parking lot."
How do you know they're owned by the same person, Jess in Arlington? Maybe it's two different Tesla owners.
Probably is.
Yeah.
Autoflex Leasing Fan Text, why do they send new cars that don't sell to a big lot and just let them sit? Well,
I have to understand where this big lot is. Sometimes people see a bunch of these new cars sitting on a lot, and if it's anywhere near a train station,
mm-hmm.
that is called, now I can't remember what they call it, where they leave them, but they will be at that facility until they then get put on semis.
Right.
And distributed to the dealerships. What did you say it was?
It's called a depot. It's where
depot.
They drop them off.
Right. And the train depot.
Or there's a port depot also down by Houston, mm-hmm. and you'll see, if you drive around on the Hardy Toll Road, you'll see thousands and thousands of cars that have been shipped in, and they park them there. Most of them have the white sticker thing on the roof and the deck lid hood. And the hood to prevent acid rain from damaging them while they're sitting there, and then they distribute them to their franchise dealers.
That's pretty cool.
I remember picking Jeeps up from the train depot in the past because it had come in
mm-hmm.
and it was our vehicle, but it hadn't been shipped to us. It was in the area.
Right.
So they're like, "Just go pick it up." And you had the right paperwork. You could just go pick it up from the train depot.
Wow.
It wasn't like snap your finger and do it, but you could do it.
Here's the other thing. There are areas where people do not have the room to store all of their cars mm-hmm. and they will set them on a lot. And then take them off the lot as they sell cars. So there's that.
I remember there was a Honda store that did that I was buying cars from all the time. They didn't have enough real estate on the highway, mm-hmm. you know, at their lot. So they had a storage facility.
Well, and also, especially in this area, you worry about hail. I mean, it could happen at any day, any
that
time.
Is true.
So
true.
If you're having a
and tornado, I mean,
bunch of cars.
We have it December, June.
Yep.
Well, and if a manufacturer has a lot of cars that they cannot sell, and we'll go back to the Volkswagen diesel issue, they had literally thousands and thousands of cars that they could not sell because the EPA had come down on them for putting in fake mileage. They had increased the mileage in those cars. So they had all these cars they couldn't sell in America,
mm-hmm.
and they put them on lots, and there's probably still some of them on lots. I know they rented the Silver Dome.
Yeah.
And stuck cars on the Silver Dome parking lot because it was unused.
Well, locally, didn't they, where Old Texas Stadium was in Irving, didn't they like level that and they used it as a parking lot
for
all those Volkswagens?
So to answer your question accurately, I'd have to know a little bit more, but there's a number of reasons that cars sit on a lot that are waiting to be sold. Now, if you don't sell, and Chrysler, or pardon me, Ram did this last year, they had 18s that they didn't sell, and they continued to sell them as new cars side by side the 19s, and that's actually how they eclipsed Chevrolet in sales and became the number two selling truck in America by selling the 18s as new vehicles beside the 19s, which had
with
different body
discounts.
Style. Very steep.
So people automatically went to it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because an 18 is still really good. It's still new, especially like brand new if it hasn't been driven.
Most definitely has all the updated safety features. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so GM announced this last week that it's discontinuing the diesel engine in the Chevrolet Equinox and the GMC Terrain for the 2020 model year. The 1.6 turbo diesel has always been sort of an oddball engine in the crossovers, and it was just there really had more to do with the gas mileage that it achieved than anything else, because it helped GM achieve their CAFE requirements, their corporate average fuel economy requirements. But now they are there without that. And they're not selling. They don't sell that well. So whenever you see a manufacturer stop selling a car, whether it be a convertible or a certain model car, there's only one reason for it. They're not making any money.
Right.
The only reason they're in business is to sell cars and make money. And when they don't make money on a vehicle, like in 1976, they discontinued, GM discontinued all their convertibles. Had nothing to do with safety. The popular word on the street was, oh, it was a safety issue.
Right.
Nothing to do with safety. They weren't selling enough of them.
But I thought crossovers and SUVs is where it's at right now.
Well, and they are, but these vehicles had a diesel engine in them, and not that many people wanted a diesel engine. So because
diesel
they manufactured, that's right. Because they manufactured and sold them, it helped their corporate average fuel economy. But now they don't need them anymore. So, and they're not selling enough of them to make money.
Got it. Autoflex Leasing Fan Text. Oh, this is Jess from Arlington again.
Yeah.
She said they work at an accounting firm next door. It's the same color and model. And she said, by the way, I'm not driving. I'm parked with my engine running.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And let me just say no thank you to the gold Honda Accord that threw litter out their window this morning.
People still litter?
That's what I said.
That's like smoking a cigarette.
I needed to get up there and see what kind of primitive animal was driving the gold Honda Accord with license plate number, which I did write down.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
Dox him, Tammy. Get him.
So, it had Colorado plates. Let's just say that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And she was texting while she was driving
down
the street.
Well, she was looking at her phone. She was looking at directions because she did. Now, she did have plenty of blinker fluid.
Mm-hmm.
She used her blinker to cut us off when she changed lanes. So that was good.
I like the, by the way, the Chevy Malibu that I'm in from Autoflex right now is, it has a blinker notification where if I leave it on, it flashes on the screen like, hey, dummy, your blinker's still on. Did you mean to change lanes or turn it off? So I like that.
We're going to run low on fluid over here.
Exactly.
Switch to the...
turn or something. Jeez, lady.
Anyway, please don't throw trash out your window. What in the world? You can get a fine for that.
Don't mess with Texas. Have you not seen the commercials? Were you not around in the 80s? A lot of people weren't, actually.
I am glad to be in Texas. We do have some pretty good highways. We're very fortunate that way. And we can get everywhere by road, unlike in Alaska.
Oh, you have to take boats and stuff.
I just visited, and there are a few places you can't get there by car. You have to take a boat or a plane.
I like that, though.
Yeah.
That seems like you'd be out.
Well, clearly
the
riffraff that litter on the street wouldn't be able to get to you.
Or if they did, you'd know who it was, because I bet it's
sure.
a small enough island that everybody knows each other.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, one of the things that people don't know about Alaska is it's not just the islands. You cannot get into the capital of the state except by boat or plane. There are no roads in and out of Juneau.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I know.
That's interesting. So, okay.
So I really, you know, the first people that went there, I guess, got there by boat.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Anyway, not that that has anything to do with the automotive industry in Texas.
All right, 877-881-1053. That's where you can reach us on the Autoflex Leasing Fan Text. Or on the phones. When we return, we're going to have Marianne Keller. She's an auto analyst. You can Google her in the break real quick because she's really, really smart, and we can't wait to talk to her. Coming up next on the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by Autoflex Leasing. We are indeed back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by Autoflex Leasing, with David Blassingame, Tammy Pickard, Larry, me, Sybil, you, the Tolos. 877-881-1053. That's where you can reach us via Autoflex Leasing Fan Text, or just give us a call. You can also call Autoflex. They're going to be open in 31
minutes.
Math.
10 a.m.
10 a.m. That's easier. Why didn't I go with that? What are the numbers there, David?
Either 817 or 972 or any local area code. And then 234-1234, 888-234-1234. If you're out of the area, as always, autoflex.com, where you can go and actually learn something about leasing a car, buying a car, that kind of thing. Most car sites are just pictures of cars and prices. Autoflex.com has actual information. If you're in the market for a car, if you're shopping for a car, and you're looking for the very best way to afford that car that you're looking for, maybe some different plans, all of that's explained at autoflex.com.
That's right. Now, we are here every Saturday with David and Tammy, who are the Autoflex leasing experts. And I always look to you guys and think, man, they've been in the industry for 100 years. But then I read about Mary Ann Keller, and she's been an auto analyst since the 1970s, and according to the New York Times, was the very first female auto analyst. So I'm excited that we have her on the show today. Good morning, Mary Ann.
Good morning.
How is everything?
Oh, everything is great. We're having a nice day here today. Hope you are as well.
We are so far.
So far. And Mary Ann, where is right here?
Connecticut.
Aha, okay, Connecticut.
Connecticut.
I am glad it's good up there. So, you know, we had a discussion that you were involved in about additional safety equipment, the additional equipment that is being added by the manufacturers, the backup camera to sort of a basic, the automated emergency braking, the blind spot warning. All of those things are being added to cars on a regular basis now by the manufacturers, which makes them more safe. But what else does it do? What are the effects of the economics of adding all those equipments to the car? Would you share your ideas on that, please?
Sure. And I think that, they're not my ideas. I think they're actual facts. When auto companies add technology to the car, I guess there's two ways of looking at it. First, it's some of the things that you just mentioned, which are purely electronic. And the driver doesn't see them, but is aware of them while driving because they automatically interact often with the behavior of the car, or as it's driving and it's encountering something, it's going across a lane or it's coming too close to the car ahead of it, it gets the warning. The other things that are happening that are also safety related are the changes that are taking place in basic equipment that we all know is in the car. For example, your exterior rearview mirror. The cars have had them since the beginning of time practically, but today's rearview mirror is a very complex assortment of electronic gadgetry that not only is letting you see what's behind you, but is also interacting with those very safety systems that you can't see. You know, how do you know that you're close to the lane? Well, something has to tell you, and very often it's part of the rearview mirror as well as the headlights. And the headlights now are not just the old kind of headlights that somebody might have gone to the local AutoZone and picked up a replacement. Today they're LEDs, they're designer headlights, if you will. They've got, you know, stripes and all sorts of interesting shapes. What used to be a kind of do-it-yourself job, you know, a few decades ago, today requires not just the huge cost of buying the light, but also these lights are often integrated additionally into some of these safety systems. So what the auto industry has done is created an incredibly complex car that is raising significantly the cost of repairing that car. It's raising it just for what you might think is a relatively simple repair. Oh, you know, somebody took my rear view mirror off, I have to get it fixed. Well, the rear view mirror today alone, without even thinking about the cost of labor to reinstall it, might be $900 instead of $100. Your windshield.
Yes.
Today is not just a piece of glass. It incorporates the cameras within the system. It's got sensors to tell it that it's raining, so start those windshield wipers. It might be also integrated with the systems that are looking forward at the traffic and integrating with the other systems in the car. So what you have is an entirely integrated vehicle, and so a simple glass repair, because your windshield, you know, a pebble hit the windshield and it's cracked, is no longer, you know, just the guy will come to my my driveway and replace it. It's now, you know, take it to the windshield installer location, and they're going to have special equipment very often to do kind of vibration tests on these things to make sure that, everything that was there is put back the way it should be put back. And so, again, you're talking about technicians who used to do a just a physical job. Today, they're having to understand through diagnostics whether or not they have reconnected everything as it should be.
And on top of that, this is Tammy Marianne, on top of that, you go from about a $300 windshield to a $1,000 or $1,500 windshield.
That's right. That's right. And so, you know, when people wonder why are their auto insurance costs rising, well, here's the answer. You know, you may be protected from an accident by virtue of these things, but accidents happen. They happen because there are distracted drivers, and they just happen. Mm-hmm. And it's when they happen, the cost of the repair is significantly greater. And what we're seeing, interestingly enough, in the insurance industry, is that more cars are being totaled when they look like, you know, physically look like they have very little damage.
Right.
They have damage that's repairable.
That happens off. That happened to David.
Yeah, that was a there was a Lexus that I was driving, and I had a minor front end accident.
He thought
I thought, and they ended up totaling out the car because of all of the sensors and all of the electronics that were damaged, and they were all located. I mean, if
in the front end,
it's in the front end. Yeah,
well, it's in the front end and it's in the back end of the car, and those are the two most vulnerable places in the car in terms of collisions.
So you're saying get T-boned if you could choose the
well,
accident.
Well, then your airbags are going to go off.
I know.
Oh, and that's going to cost.
Okay. So I think we all need to drive a lot more carefully.
Yes.
Well, you know, that's always the case, but I think, you know, there are corollary effects from all of this technology, apart from the fact that they've made cars very, very expensive and new cars are put out of the reach of a lot of families who typically in the past could afford a new car.
Absolutely.
Do you think, Marianne, that all cars are kind of equal now as far as safety goes and technology?
Well, it's hard to say. I think one of the problems for repair shops and even collision in body shops, is that from one manufacturer to the next, the way a part would be replaced or installed or the gadgetry to which it connects is different. So they have to have, you know, the specific diagnostics, the codes, et cetera, that apply to every car. And with each new model year, there's more stuff in the car or the stuff has been upgraded. I just took my car in for a regular check, and I discovered that I had 4 software updates that were necessary for it. So I had to leave it overnight so those software updates could be done. It's, you know, the car has now become a technological, you know, environment that is raising the cost for repair shops because they now need new diagnostic equipment. It's raising the skill level for the technicians. And, you know, and I think for the insurance companies, it poses a challenge because your car, after an accident, is supposed to be brought back to the factory standard. Can they make that promise?
Right. So
and so this is, you know, I think these are the unforeseen challenges that come when you have this rapid explosion of technology where every model year there's something new added because they're trying to get us to level 3 autonomy or you know, some higher level of perceived safety. There's a cost to the consumer that comes from it, not just because they have to pay for it when they buy the car initially, but also in the insurance rates that they're going to incur over time. And then I think the final issue is, do used car buyers value those things? Historically, if you can't see it, it's not there. And, you know, technology typically, because it evolves so fast, has a half-life of a few years, and the car stays on the road for 15 years, mm-hmm. or can stay on the road for 15 years. So what is its value as it goes through the ownership cycle, you know, not from the first owner to the second owner to the third owner? At some point, the technology content, which today represents about 30% of the value of the car, becomes a lot less valuable to that purchaser than is it mechanically sound and is it going to get me to work and to school?
You're absolutely right, because I don't recall anybody really asking for anti-lock brakes
right
on a used car. mm-hmm. when those first came out. You know, that wasn't a primary thing. And I do recall trying to sell based on safety features like the electronic stability system or any one of those that keep your car kind of where it needs to be. People mm-hmm. forget. They think they can handle everything on their own. So you're right. That did not bring back any value for the resale.
Well, just think about a typical used car lot where you've got, you know, every make and model and every model year, possibly.
Right.
How is that salesperson supposed to know what the content of that specific car is?
Oh, that's
true. He can
tell
you whether it's got leather seats. He can tell you how many airbags, because that's pretty obvious. I can tell you all about the entertainment system, but can they tell you about the gadgetry that is within the bumper and within all of the systems that I just mentioned, the headlights, the mirror, the windshield, et cetera?
Not without the window sticker, I don't think, because even if you have the VIN with most of the tools that dealers even have to book out the vehicle to look for all those features, they still miss.
They still
so
miss.
Much.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, and one of the things we've done at Autoflex is now on all our pre-owned cars, we print out the original manufacturer suggested equipment list and all that stuff so that we can see exactly what is on that vehicle. Do you find now, and we know that the average vehicle, according to whose numbers you look at, Edmunds or CarsDot or someone, the average vehicle, new car, is now somewhere around $37,000 or
$38,000. Right.
Do you find that the resale value on the cars in any way reflects the additional equipment for these recently made cars that are back on the market again as pre-owned?
It's hard to say. Right now we've got a very strong used car market, and some of these technologies are not yet into the used car realm. So I think we'll probably see it in the next year or so, as the cars with a little bit of the technology that I've mentioned are going to come into the used car market. You know, I think that this is a real challenge, and part of my career was to be a board member of Dollar Thrifty when it was an independent rental car company, and I could see this as a particular issue for rental car companies. We used to try to buy, you know, the most optimally equipped vehicle to maintain its residual value. And we often, you know, did not go for the world's greatest entertainment system because nobody was going to own that car, you know, in their
right.
experience with us. They were going to turn on the radio and get the latest news, and that's about it.
Right.
And so I think this is a challenge for a lot of fleets who purchase cars because, you know, you're raising the price of the most important expense they have, which is depreciation. But I personally think that, you know, if history is going to repeat itself, we will see that electronic content because it's going to be replaced inevitably by something better, something smarter, something better, something cheaper. And that's just the way technology operates. And so, you know, the early adopters of it will probably not see the technology value held, and therefore residual values will not reflect some of the cost that's in today's cars due to those features.
So that essentially would raise the first-year depreciation cost of the car because the resale value as a percentage of its original price would not be as great.
Yes, and years ago I did do some work for one of the major auction companies, and we actually did do an analysis of certain features that were in the cars at that time, and I remember doing a comparison of navigation systems, and we discovered that after 1 year, the nav system was worthless. You basically saw it come back down to the car without the navigational system. The buyer did not pay anything for it.
Well, yeah, you have it on your phone.
Well, that
That's
is true.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
In the beginning,
exactly.
you had to buy a new disc.
That's right. And upgrade it on TomTom.
Streets. Mm-hmm. Right.
We're talking to Mary Ann Keller. She's an auto analyst from Mary Ann Keller and Associates. We have a personal question for you off our AutoFlex Leasing fan text. Since you are an expert, Marianne, somebody asks, what kind of car do you drive?
Well, I was very fortunate to lease a loaner Mercedes car.
Nice.
Those are always a good deal.
So I got a really good deal on leasing because I said, you know, I don't drive that much. So what can I get for, like, under $400 a month?
See, did you hear that? DFW leasing is the way to go.
And one
leasing
that's already
actually,
been driven
you know
for a while is a great savings.
I think that you know, the challenge will be, you know, to set that residual value correctly on the lease. But given the risk that is inherent in all cars, especially in luxury cars where this technology is infused on a more rapid basis, leasing is probably the right thing to do.
Well, and the other thing we're seeing is the rapid adoption of the different pieces of the eventually maybe level 5 self-driving vehicles, the ADS stuff, the automatic driving stuff. As it changes, and it changes rapidly, the car, a car that's 5 years old, doesn't have near the amount of equipment on it that a new car does. And so a lot of people want to trade to pick up that new equipment.
Well, they may want to trade to pick up the equipment, but they may want the car without that. Without that, I'm not sure that everybody wants to be able to drive hands-free.
Yeah, that's true. So while we're on the subject of new and upcoming, I know that you've done a lot of work on the value of Tesla and where Tesla's going and how they've done. They released a story this last week, or actually it was a leaked message this last week, that their manufacturing was going really well and that their quality had improved. What do you see in that area?
Well, the last phrase that you said was interesting, that their quality has improved. That's acknowledging that their quality was terrible.
It's true.
Which I think, you know, anybody who bought an early vintage Model 3 could probably tell you, because they're probably waiting for an appointment at one of the insufficient service centers that they operate.
Oh, no.
Okay. Well,
so, nowhere to go but up.
Nowhere to go but up. But I think that they have their problems. I think capital raising is going to be a problem for them. I think, you know, there's been a lot of hoopla because they came very close to achieving their retail delivery goal for the second quarter. On the other hand, they did it in what I would call the traditional auto company way. It's supposed to be a company that sells all cars at the same price to everybody, but we know that they were giving deals. And they were flipping their pricing around, you know, sort of making little comments, well, our prices are going up in 2 weeks. Well, that encourages somebody to buy now. Or we're going to raise prices, or we're going to lower prices. So they made a whole series of sort of whiplash pricing actions during the second quarter. And then, of course, offered a bonus to their own salespeople. This sounds like a salesperson in a dealership. That wasn't supposed to be the case. To encourage people to purchase the car. And then you also had the added incentive of, on July 1st, the federal tax credit dropped in half.
Right.
So there was a reason why people would pull forward and purchase a car in the second quarter. On the other hand, I'm waiting to see the financial results, because I think it's going to show up in a lower gross profit margin.
Yeah.
And I think that going forward, they did what traditional auto companies do when they run big incentives. It's called pulling demand forward. So we'll see what the third quarter holds.
Well, and the other thing is, they don't use generally accepted accounting principles, nor do they release all of the information on their income and their costs. They release sort of what they want to. So it's a little hard to put a finger on exactly where they're at.
Well, you know, they're in the green eyeshade realm right now. I think that their credibility has taken a hit after this last capital raise that they did earlier this year. And, you know, the investor community, in terms of putting new capital into it, into the company, whether it's debt or equity, is going to be very, very careful, and they're going to demand the answers before they spend the money. That's a different category of investor than the retail investor who's, you know, gung-ho on Tesla and thinks they're going to change the world.
Right, because it's just money to those guys, and they understand that
they
if you lose money.
They understand the money, and they're going to go dig deeper than we might see.
So in that same vein, Uber and Lyft have been in the news a great deal in the last 4, 5, 6 months because of the way that they're set up on the gig economy, the drivers not being employees and now demanding on being employees, and that changes the whole aspect of their profitability. What do you think?
Well, I think so far they've pretty much won their cases. I mean, that's always a threat to them. I mean, they have lots of regulatory threats, one being, you know, limitations as to the number of Uber cars or rideshare cars that can go into Manhattan. That would be another one. Or Manhattan, New York City's regulation that all Uber drivers get X number of dollars per hour, essentially a minimum wage guarantee. So, You know, I think this is a new business. It's a business that clearly has a service that consumers like. On the other hand, because it came on the scene so quickly, regulation, you know, always runs very slow because the regulators, the politicians, can't see the effects of it. I can see the effects of it when I go into Manhattan, where I was yesterday. You crawl instead of drive.
Because there's so many more ride shares on the road?
And every other car has a license plate that says TLC on it, which means Taxi and Limousine Commission, because in New York City, they must all be registered with the Taxi and Limousine Commission. So regulation is catching up with the industry, and I think that that poses challenges for them, as is the whole... You know, there's a corollary to what you just raised about will they be employees or contractors. The answer, I think, is they have a problem with churn. A lot of people want to be, you know, want to make a little extra money, so they become a driver for a rideshare company and discover after 2 months that they can't make money. You know,
right.
They're smart enough to know that the car is depreciating, they're putting extra miles on it, they're getting wear and tear on the tire and the mechanical parts of the car, and they're putting gasoline in it, and, you know, and they come away with the equivalent of 50 cents on the mile or something like that. And you know, sort of lower compensation than what the federal government allows for deduction of mileage for business purposes. So I think it's a challenge for them to reduce driver churn. You know, this idea that's permeating Wall Street of, you know, well, at some point they're not going to need drivers, they're going to have autonomous cars, that's absurd. Has anybody thought of, A, who's going to own those cars and how much are they going to cost and what's the depreciation? Right now the deal is pretty good. Somebody else owns the car. Somebody else fixes the car. Somebody else gasses it up and maintains it. If it's autonomous, who owns it? Does Uber own it? I don't think they want to own it. Well, who owns it? And who fixes it? Who maintains it? Who washes it out every day? Because people without a driver are certainly going to make a mess of the car.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
And all of those autonomous features cost a huge amount of money. $37,000 is not going to be the average price of an autonomous car. Maybe $100,000.
Right?
And so then,
the cost these of a reasonable ride. Numbers.
Yeah, it's really pretty amazing because we appear to be pricing ourselves out of the market.
Mm-hmm.
As dealers.
Out of the car market. Well, I think what we're pricing ourselves into is a robust used car market.
Well, right.
Ah, very good.
Yeah.
So perhaps more opportunity to lease used cars, because I think that there's no longer a stigma associated with a used car. Used cars, you know, back in the day, you know, if they were 5 years old, people would think about them as, you know, ready to go to the junk heap. Well, today, a five-year-old car. My husband drives a seven-year-old car, and it's perfectly fine.
Right. Well, and the average age of the car on the street is all the way to 11.8 years.
Yes, and, you know, ever since the 1970s, when I became an auto analyst, people would say, oh, my God, the average age of a car on the road is 7 years old. That means that we're going to have this huge replacement cycle. And the only thing it's done in the last 50 years is get older.
Right.
And
that
that's
is true.
What's going to continue to happen.
That is true. Well, Marianne, I really want to thank you for coming on with us this morning. It's been wonderful to have you and to listen to your insights. We'll love to have you back anytime you'd like to join us.
Anytime you think I've tickled your fancy with a topic that I enjoy writing about, I'll be happy to do it.
All right, we'll talk to you next Saturday then, Marianne.
Fascinating.
There she goes. MarianneKeller.com is where you can find her. Thank you so much, Marianne. Have a
great
weekend. And we're going to be back with more Saturday Morning Test Drive brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing. Welcome back. It is indeed the Saturday Morning Test Drive brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing, David Blassingame, Tammy Pickard, Larry, me, Sybil, you, the Tolos, 877-881-1053. That's the number where you can reach us if you have a question. Now's a great time to ask it via AutoFlex Leasing fan text, or at 10 a.m. you can call AutoFlex and the numbers are?
Any local area code and then 234-1234-888. 234-1234 out of the area. As always, AutoFlex.com, where you can find those great manager specials, those Save Money Monday cars. And those cars are actually, we've had them a little too long. I want to mention a couple of things. Number one, when you see the payment on the cars on the manager specials, that is with no money out of pocket. When you see an advertisement generally for an automotive lease, it is with literally thousands of dollars mm-hmm. down. And so you don't know that unless you have a machine that stops the printing or stops the television so you can read that tiny little print.
Yeah, you hit pause.
Yeah, yeah. It says, it says, you know, 8,000 down and you right. can have this price. The prices that you see at Autoflex.com on the manager specials are with no money out of pocket and no payment for 45 days. So when you see a $349 payment on a on an almost new pickup, a 2019 pickup, very slightly used, that's a real number, and no money out of pocket for 45 days gets you that monthly payment. So Autoflex.com, look for the manager specials. If you want to find out about how that's structured, you can find that out at Autoflex.com or at 888-234-1234.
Yes, that's also the number to call. We have an Autoflex Leasing fan texter who says, what's the best truck that gets the best gas mileage?
You know, that would be a good question for the Autoflex Leasing computer system.
Right.
Because the FlexLease computer system knows all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And they can answer that very quickly. I don't have access to the computer here on the air. I can tell you, resale value, I can tell you, because I deal with that on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. But best gas mileage, that's a really good question. I would call Autoflex, ask one of the specialists there to look it up, and they'll get you the information.
So I'm going to take a wild guess and say the Toyota Tacoma.
Oh, yeah, Toyotas are pretty good with that. Or the Tundra, maybe?
That's the bigger one.
Yeah.
Depends on what kind of truck you need, but mm-hmm. I was just looking for fuel economy, so I thought the smaller would be better, and I also do love a Honda Ridgeline.
Yeah.
That's a love or probably hate mm-hmm. vehicle. I don't know if there's anything in between there, but I love it.
I figured out that one of the coolest things that anyone has ever done is the Honda Ridgeline, if you buy the right trim level, has made the entire bed a radio.
What?
Yeah. It resonates. And the entire bed becomes the radio of the truck. And it's pretty darned amazing.
Wait, can you still put stuff in it?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. Autoflex Leasing Fan Text, I bought a 2018 Renegade in April. Really want a Ford Flex, which I love, by the way. I'm thinking about trading. My score should be about 700 by then. What do you think my lease payment will be? Okay. Way too much information or way too much unknown information to be able to give you an accurate number. I can tell you that even a Renegade is not going to maintain all of its value. So when you trade that car that quickly, you're going to have to figure that you're going to have negative equity. I don't know exactly, again, how much. I don't know where you paid, what you paid for it. Don't know what you paid down if you made one. Don't know if it's a lease or a buy. So give one of our specialists a call and they'll give you an idea. But I can tell you that if it's a recently purchased vehicle from April to now, that the first year depreciation average on vehicles is somewhere around 25%. So about 25% of whatever the vehicle would cost, total number of dollars, that's what it would have lost in value. That's, by the way, another good reason to lease your cars.
Yes, indeed. I like when we get to the fun stories toward the end of the show, because these are like my favorite parts. They're always mm-hmm. kind of wacky and people doing bad things.
Well, so I'm an addict of a program called Stranger Things, and they just started season number 3. And it's a great show.
Everyone loves it. I've never seen it. I heard there were aliens, and I was like, out.
Right.
No, it's a science fiction show, but it's really, really great. And one of the great things is the cars that they have in the show. The show is based in the 1980s, which means the cars go all the way back into the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is not unusual to see a 71 or 72 Ford LTD or a Volvo 244 sedan, just great old cars. One of the cars that a regular drives in that car is a 1976 Pinto. So there's just so many, you know, the chief of police drives a 1980 Chevrolet Blazer.
Ah.
And it's a great vehicle. So if you're a car nut, by the way.
Well, I don't know how great it was as far as reliability.
Well, they were good. if you see the show, listen to this, when they play the song My Sharona in the background,
uh-huh.
which they do play. It's not actually My Sharona. It's Weird Al Yankovic's My Bologna.
Oh
yeah, yeah.
I would have said My Winona. Winona and Ryder in it?
No,
oh,
sure.
Oh, she is, in fact.
Yeah.
But that's the song. He made fun of that song.
Right.
The other thing, and a couple of other things. One, they've got an 86 Toyota, which is just an amazing car, a van. But the biggie for me was the 1984 Cadillac Eldorado Biarritz convertible, because originally Cadillac didn't make that car in a convertible.
Who drove
so
that one?
The one that they have in the show had to have been made by an aftermarket company. Several aftermarket companies had factories across from GM plants, and they would take the Eldorado over there, literally cut the top off of it, make it into a convertible, and send it back for final assembly. So the 84 Biarritz convertible is just awesome, because that was a car that GM didn't wholly make themselves.
Right. And 80s are back in. Like, American Horror Story is coming out. Their next series is American Horror Story 1984, and it's all based about... like that time
with
and
the
era.
Good music.
Yes.
Autoflex Leasing Fantext. Winona Ryder drives the Pinto in that show. You bet.
I guess I thought they were recalled.
Autoflex Leasing Fantext. The Honda Ridgeline is the modern day El Camino.
Okay.
You know, structurally, they're the same.
Yeah.
Because there's not a separate bed and a frame under it. It is all one piece.
Yeah. But I bet it. The Ridgeline probably holds its load a lot better than the El Camino. That thing, boy, I could burn those tires out without even trying in a corner.
Autoflex Leasing Fantext recently leased a car a year ago, and now from Autoflex, and my mileage has changed drastically, which generally means they're driving a lot more miles than they were. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a job change or where they live, mm-hmm. That kind of thing. Is it possible to trade the vehicle in early, or should I drive it full term? So that's or purchase it. It's a pretty simple question.
Generally, we look at every angle.
Mm-hmm.
What is it worth as a trade-in? And what is your payoff? So what's the difference there? You know, is that $600 or $6,000? Then, how many miles are you driving? We can look at that. And sometimes people think, oh my gosh, I'm driving way over. I'm going to have to pay $1 million. But then when we average out, okay, this is how much your driving has changed. If you keep this up, now you're going to have 20,000 more miles on it than you initially signed up for.
Right.
And based on the cost per mile, which figure is lower? The end of term penalty or now? And most of the time it's at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because while they do charge you for those miles, trading in a lease early because you haven't paid your fair share of the depreciation, right? You were putting that off. Well, now you still have to pay it.
Right.
So generally, if your mileage changes, wait until the end, because so many different elements can affect that. Gosh, what if somebody totals your car on Central Expressway or the tollway? You know, you're driving down the road and they take care of it for you. Well, then you're not going to have that mileage penalty. What if it gets in a hailstorm? You know, mm-hmm. and they total it because of all the sensors. So I'd say maybe drive it to the end, unless you absolutely know you're now driving 100,000 miles a year, and then you just need to buy it at the end and keep it. That's another option.
Right.
Okay, so one last story. This last week, the police in Guthrie, Oklahoma, which is about 30 miles north of Oklahoma City, stopped a car. And in the car, they found a gun in the console, a terrarium in the back seat containing a pet timber rattlesnake, and uranium.
What?
So far, they have charged the driver, Stephen Jennings, with a stolen vehicle, transporting an open container of liquor, and driving with a suspended license. His passenger, Rachel Riviera, was charged with possession of a firearm as a convicted felon.
Name that drug. I'm going to guess meth.
I don't know for sure, but here's the issue, or the issues. They don't know what to do about the uranium. They have an open container of uranium. They're not even sure where it came from, but they know what it is. And it's rattlesnake season in Oklahoma.
Oh,
so it's not illegal to transport a rattlesnake around, because people are out there killing them.
And the people look exactly like you think they would. If you want to see a picture of them, go to autoflex.com, click on the Facebook page. You can see all the stories we talked about right here.
And they do look exactly like you think they would.
They do. Autoflex.com again is the website. Or in 3 minutes, you can call any local area code 234-1234. And they've got specialists waiting to help you out. We'll be back next Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Thank you to Larry. Thank you to Marianne Keller for calling in. For David Blessingame and Tammy Pickard, I'm Sybil Summers. Fan Jam live from SportsCon at Fair Park is coming up next. We'll see you next weekend. It's a Saturday morning test drive brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.